everyone. It's Wade here from Scrotus POTUS. We have a fantastic episode for you on this one. We've got from Canada, Glenn Wolfe, and all the way from Missouri, USA, we've got Will Franken. We are going to be talking about the Trump travel ban, the State of the Union itself, the New York Times versus Donald Trump, and the Democrats. Are they shooting themselves in the foot? Are they even trying anymore? And of course, we're also going to get into free speech and how free speech is affecting everything in terms of politics and in terms of point of view and in terms of people being little whiners. Subscribe, tune in, enjoy, share with your friends. Enjoy this one, guys. All right, this is episode 4 of Scrotus POTUS, where me and a bunch of dudes, sometimes could be a girl, talk about North American politics from a UK expat point of view. Joining me, we've got an American here from Missouri. We've got Will Franken.
Hello.
How you doing, bud?
I'm all right.
You've been in the UK about 5 years now.
That's right.
Doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're liking it here?
I am, yeah. You know, I've made enemies here. And friends, just like I did back in the States, but I'm liking it.
That's good.
I love living amongst history.
It's a good thing, and hopefully your friends and enemies both listen.
That's right. They will.
Most listeners, and also a fellow Canadian, born actually. We just found out.
Yes,
same
I
town.
Was.
The same town, Mississauga. It's a satellite city of Toronto.
Yeah.
Mississauga. It was the hardest thing to learn to spell when I was a kid.
Yeah, I still misspell it on forms. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, when you're like, where are you born? Yeah, you're like, damn it, can I just say Toronto?
Yeah.
And you've been over here for a long time, haven't you?
I was here for 10 years, and then I left for 5 on an odyssey, and now I've returned to impregnate a woman and stay here.
It's already been done, though. It's not. You're not waiting.
No,
to
I still haven't picked her. I looked at a few prospects on the bus, but...
Nice.
I don't think anybody's going to make it through the second round, but I do have that silver rose in my pocket when I find her.
Nice.
Or him. We could
be.
It could be the X factor or the fear factor.
You don't know which
either
one.
Either way.
So your odyssey, what did you find when you went back to North America for a bit, did you?
I went everywhere. I was in Australia and the Orient.
They still call it that, yeah.
No.
That just you?
No, but I feel it gives it a gravitas. But apparently in America, Oriental is offensive.
I don't know. I've not been back for 5 years.
Yeah, no. I was shocked because I did spend some of the time in America, and I referenced somebody as Oriental, and they just were like, whoa, and I'm like,
it's not PC.
If you're American, you cannot draw a line at a Canadian saying Oriental. I mean, there's still very much apartheid going on there, and then whoa, we don't call them Orientals. Come on.
What do they suggest you call? Because you're not. I mean, there's a lot of times too when Britain they call Asian someone who is from Asia, and we would distinguish and go, "Was that? You mean someone who's from India? Someone who's from Pakistan?"
Yeah.
But there's a convenience with that though. So if there's a jihadi attack, they can just say could have been the guy from the Cantonese restaurant, and we can never really narrow down.
I
think it's very convenient. Yeah,
I don't know how many Cantonese jihadis there are, but I get you.
There are.
I'm sure there's lots of bad people everywhere and lots of good people too.
Yeah, they've had a few running through the streets with machetes.
Oh, it's the Northern Province, so it's like a lot of
if that is Cantonese, I don't know. I'm not an expert. All I'll say in the end of it all, Oriental is still a ramen noodle flavor.
It can't be
that bad of a thing to say.
I've called Oriental. I've said Oriental before, and obviously you had sort of hesitate. Go, am I saying something right? And I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah.
We always start this start the podcast here. We've got a Donald Trump tweet generator, and basically I put your name in, and then Donald Trump comes up with a tweet about you.
Hmm.
So Will Franken is totally overrated clown who speaks without knowing the facts.
If he saw my show, he would see one of his biggest advocates. So I don't think that's him tweeting it.
Okay.
This might be a generator.
Yeah. Donald J. Trump writes, Glenn Will, you were born stupid.
Yes. Everyone is.
Pretty much. Babies are dumb.
Yeah, he's managed to cover every base there.
So it's Independence Day coming up, 4th of July. It's Canada's 150th. A lot of celebrations going on here in London for all these kind of things. How should America be proud? Are we in a proud state, Will? Is America doing well, do you think?
I don't know. I'm watching it from afar. I mean, to me, Trump was a breath of fresh air. And now that the Russia thing's over, he's allowed to hopefully do what you know, those of us who voted for him elected him to do. And if he does, then we can be proud. That being said, there's a lot of, I don't know if we'll touch on this later, but there's a lot in current American and Western culture that's really hard to defend. And so when you wave the flag now, are you waving it for reality TV and Ariana Grande and all that stuff like that? I mean, sometimes I have to be honest and say, is there really much to fight for? It seems like a very nihilistic, boring culture. And but hopefully we can get that back. We can start to love education again and intellect and reward things based on merit instead of diversity quotas. If we do, we'll have lots to be proud of.
And don't forget hot dogs and big trucks.
That's right. Monster trucks.
Monster trucks. Glenn, how about yourself? How does America, I mean, as a global citizen, how do you file America's doing? How are they doing going to their...
Yeah, financially they're doing well, but it's the arms deals, the two major ones that I would say you can't really have your chest swell with pride. You're like, what? Well, we've managed to get a lot of weapons into the hands of Saudis, and God damn it, that's what the forefathers died for. Mm. Well, Saudi, and Qataris, yeah. By the way.
Well, that was a weird thing, because Trump goes there, he visits, yeah. And then suddenly the Qataris are on a list.
I know.
And then the list is both people buying arms from America. Mm-hmm. So is he arming a war?
Yes, yes, I believe that's what's happening. But they always knew that it was Qatar funding ISIS.
Well, I mean, Qatar obviously has got a lot of hands in a lot of crap. And, oh, no, we didn't. We're just building malls.
Yeah.
But it turns
out.
Well,
I was in Lebanon last year, and the guy who gave me a lift to the airport, which is always the best way to find out about stuff, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
like,
no,
he told me that Syria was based on Qatar trying to get a pipeline to Turkey, and they had to go through, and Assad said, yes, you can do it, but 25% goes to me, and they said no. And he said, what are you going to do? I'm Assad.
Wow.
And that's where it
and
came
so
from.
And so you're basically, this guy's saying that what then, he got America, Qatar got America to stir
yeah,
it up?
Yeah, the whole thing, no, the whole thing was based on a pipeline.
You're not saying that there's fights in our world based on oil, though, are you?
I'm starting to come around to that idea.
But that, though, there's just the decaying matter of our predecessors. Why would we fight over something that obviously kills us? Now, there's a lot of stuff going on with the fake news, and we'll get into it later. But how do we feel? I mean, I've always sort of been with Trump in sort of the way that, look, I think that when you say you're going to drain a swamp, a lot of people are going to put targets on your head, particularly when there's 600,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of shit there. There's a lot of things that pay-for-play politics, a lot of stuff that was bad, a lot of stuff that I was, you know, hoping that get rid of in every country, that we can start getting rid of this kind of stuff. But by doing so, does he make that target on him and anything that he do with the liberal press almost impossible to have a victory?
By draining the swamp.
Well, I think saying that you're going to attempt to drain the swamp. You know, basically, if you say, I'm fucking coming for you, people are going to go, oh, yeah, you're going to come for us, are you? So do you think that makes it more difficult? Because I think it makes it more difficult when he announces, and he's quite bold at announcing what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you say something like that, does it mean that everyone then puts a target on your head and you can't get anything done?
Yeah, it's difficult now. Although it's a positive in that the left is turning left and the right is turning right now. But I think he's having difficulty, and it's going to be down to the polarization. He's spending a lot of his time trying to undo what the last guy did.
Do you think it's too much so that he's doing that?
I think that the people in the time of Obama voted for Obama and voted for him to make those changes. So if that's the way we start doing things, like just retrospectively going, not only are we going to like just changing, yeah. Nothing's ever going
to
get done.
But every president does that. I mean, the first term of every president is to erase everything that someone else has just done. It's like piss all over it. I mean, every president has done it. Clinton has done it. You know, Obama's done it.
But first off, just to get correct on Obama, I mean, I was there when that nightmare unfolded of everybody. This is the Corbyn thing with Glastonbury. We're seeing that was Obama. It was MTV. It was all the pop culture promoting it. And honestly, I call him an affirmative action candidate. He was different. He was black. Symbolically, it was going to end slavery for all of these white guilt people. But everything he was espousing, I don't think people were actually voting for him for his policies at all. I think it was just, you put him against an old white man like McCain, And this goes back to my, there are two left wings now in America. There's a radical left wing and a moderate. The moderate left wing are the Republicans. The radical left wing are the Democrats. And McCain was trying to out-liberal, if you look back at the old election clips, he was trying to out-liberal Obama. And I say, they're going to go with a younger, blacker version of you. So if you go on about you're concerned about global warming, this is not a conservative cause. There was no conservative running in the 2008 or 2012 election, no real conservative. And so that's how Obama got in.
You think that they knew that Obama probably had a good chance. You know, he's got Oprah and everyone behind him. So they just watered down the politic.
Yeah.
And they watered down the right wing because...
And the only time I thought that they had a chance was when I saw Sarah Palin as his VP pick. Not because I'm a Sarah Palin fan, but because now you're thinking like the opposition is thinking. You're getting a minority and you're throwing that out there and say, hey, if you don't do X, then you must not like blacks or women. You're playing that game, which is what it's been reduced to. Similarly, with Corbyn goes out of Glastonbury to a walled festival that you have to pay, is it £250 to get into that festival? And then he speaks out against the wall, you know. But that's the kind of hypocrisy that a pop culture forgives in its leaders, and that's what Obama was, and that's what Corbyn will be.
But now, conversely, then, could you say that Donald Trump,
he
was the pop culture for the real grassroots conservatives,
the people at work,
the people that wanted jobs. Because the real conservatives were like threatened by him, going, "No, we can't have this guy,
absolutely.
And he can't have this guy. This guy's too crazy. He's too crazy."
Yeah.
But the people are just going, "I'm fed up. Fuck you. I'm fed up."
It's the beauty of populism. Honestly, it's the people who actually work and pay taxes and. Or people, I mean, I wrote a long essay, like an intellectual artist, if I may call myself an intellectual artist appeal for Donald Trump. You know, I had basically 25 bullet points. This is coming from an artist, somebody who, you know, liked LSD when he was a kid. Donald Trump makes perfect sense to me, because who else is going to kill political correctness? Political correctness goes beyond language. I mean, this is implemented as policy. Political correctness, I believe, actually kills people. If we could open our mouths about what happened here, like three times in a row, three jihadi attacks in a row, we might not have as much, I think.
Glenn, do you think political correctness is, I mean, obviously as a comic, do you see that political correctness is killing or is it stagnating?
Well, as a Canadian expat, as much as I like Justin Trudeau, he's made some very odd moves lately.
Like doing everything against what he said he was going to do?
No, he didn't. He was never like that. People put a lot on him, but... No, it was the anti-Islamophobia or the whatever it is. You can't say anything against Islam, which that's not Canada's not based. I mean, I have no real want to attack Islam, but if I saw it doing something that I didn't like, I'd like to have the right to say it. And now it's going to be illegal to use the wrong description of somebody. Like, if somebody identifies as a woman, you have to call her or it's illegal.
Yeah.
And that's
what if she doesn't identify with her?
Well, what if you just can't tell?
Exactly. You're
and I think at that point as much as I like Justin Trudeau, I liked his dad, I can't really live in Canada. I can't do my job because I am an outspoken comedian.
Well, and you don't work for a bank, and Canada's very controlled, like a nanny state, and take care of you and
move you here,
so get a job and get this. But also, it's
and also
that...
with the Mickey Ward or Mikey Ward, he got in trouble.
Oh, he's hysterical.
Yeah, he got in trouble for making fun of somebody who has a press agent.
The Make-A-Wish thing was hysterical. Yeah. You know this guy, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. There's also, to that point, there was a woman in Toronto who was dressed, Islamic dress, and went into a Canadian Tire and pulled a knife out and started attacking people.
Yeah.
And then saying, you know, Allah Akbar, and saying these things and these incendiary things. It was not allowed to be reported in the press. It was only reported outside of Canada because they didn't want to. They didn't want to incite people.
That happened in London too, just after the bridge attack.
Well, this is Canada, so they banned the news story coming out. So to that point, then you go, well, we want to hear about people, even if it's that stupid idiot who drove his van. Yeah. The guy's just an idiot. He's not a terrorist. He's a fucking racist idiot.
Yeah.
So.
No, there was...
We need... And you're right, to the political...
But I was saying, you talk about the Finsbury... Okay, so this is the problem. Theresa May... Because I attack Corbyn all the time, and the people they think, oh, de facto, you must love Theresa May. I said, no. Theresa May is a perfect example of the right wing no longer being the right wing. She is an empty suit. She does not. It's about her leadership. She does not espouse why it's important that we have conservative leadership today. So she had three chances with the jihadi attacks to say, like, here is the issue. Yeah. We have people that, unfortunately, that live with us. Some of these policies of multiculturalism have failed. And here, you know, there's certain ideologies amongst us that are antithetical to Western values. She let three chances slip by. She said enough is enough. And then the Finsbury mosque attack happened, and now she's in a bind where she has to sit down with the Muslim Council of Britain and hear their concerns. So after three jihadi attacks in this country, she has to, now the narrative has switched back to Islamophobia, because she did not open her mouth as a conservative, as somebody who is the leader of a Western nation, and say why it's important to stand up for basic freedom of ridicule. The night that the London attack happened, I sat there and heard three women go up and talk about their vaginas, and I'm a lesbian, that's okay, right, ladies? Lesbian, vagina, nothing but boring identity politics. And all I could do was sit there and go, there was just a suicide bombing in Manchester, and this is all you can talk about. Nobody can ridicule religion anymore.
Well, you know,
it's insane. And there you go, 15 minutes later, London attack.
Well,
yeah, it costs lives.
I'm not on the side of the Daily Mail or the Sun. You know, it's been years since I bought those publications. But
I like
yeah, for sure. No, I used to be able to read it with a tongue in cheek, but it just bothered me after a while. But they made that cartoon where they had the guy, they had the Welsh racist dude driving that van saying, "Read the Daily Mail,
the Guardian,
and the Sun."
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they'd done that with a van saying "Read the Quran"?
Yeah,
which is basically the other side of that argument, and that's where it comes to, you know. Like, and yes, the Daily Mail and the Sun should be able to take their licks, but that's one sided now.
Or did a cartoon in Manchester saying "Read the Guardian"? Or Corbyn going, "Hey, you got friends in Hamas."
Exactly. I'm just saying that the Daily Mail and the Sun are the only one who come out as adults in that picture because they're the only ones that can stand up to ridicule.
That's right.
And I think when we start going and we sort of reflect back to America, we have Donald Trump, who is not afraid to take on the press. In fact, you know, CNN and everyone, and call them out fake news.
Yep.
And I think that you start looking at a difference here with the politicians. That it does, seems like no one wants the fucking job. It seems like everyone is so scared.
In this country,
here. Yeah. I think in Britain, nobody wants it with Brexit and everything.
The amount that Theresa May has failed to show up to big events, it's no surprise she didn't have any kids. Oh, mom's missed the big play again.
Look at
everyone waiting 2 hours late. I thought you were coming.
But look at the Grenfell Tower thing. Okay, so from what I understand, the narrative in The Guardian and all that is that Theresa May is inhuman because she met with firefighters, and Jeremy Corbyn is human. So the press diagnoses as if they're, because everybody's a psychologist nowadays. Yeah. Everybody's on drugs. Everybody's on, that you want to have a diagnosis because nobody actually wants an artist. So like now art has a diagnosis. She must be bipolar, blah, blah, blah. Theresa May must be a sociopath. I'd rather see a PM meet with firefighters and victims.
Those firefighters gave a lot, and much respect to those London firefighters and ever the emergency services of London who have fucking busted their ass in the past few weeks.
Here's the thing, too, though. The Grenfell was about wealth redistribution. Now, Theresa May showed up and got booed. The Queen showed up and was doing high fives. No, I'm sorry. That is the... And it's just come out today that they need another $1 billion to fix up Buckingham Palace. Like, do you really have so little of an idea of what the society is going through that you basically are telling everyone to eat cake?
And they couldn't open up enough room in Buckingham Palace to maybe throw some of those people in?
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Open up a hall.
That's never going to happen.
Get those people to fix the wiring.
All right, so then...
But don't you find it strange, though, that had a cause? And the three terrorist attacks didn't... I'm talking about the Glastonbury left.
Oh, yeah.
That did not have a cause, so we all go to the concert, Ariana Grande, One Love, and the story is done. We're finished with this topic, and then the towers. I remember the headline in the Metro: "Arrest the killers." And you look through the story; they haven't even established at the time of this article the cause.
No, they don't.
Get the killers.
It's sad. And it is sort of sad because when you look at it, the terrorists and a lot of terrorists were looking, going, Fuck, all we needed to do was a faulty fridge. Shit, look at all the damage we could have done.
Yeah, arson.
You know?
We could do simple arson.
I'm still not convinced that wasn't arson. Just the way that it went up and the way that they cleared those other buildings, like at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Snuck in there?
Who knows?
Well, no, like just, unless you have a credible threat of human interaction, you don't bang on someone's door at 3. Everybody out. Why?
Well, wasn't it one guy? I don't know. And I could be out of, I thought it was one guy was banging saying, my fridge is caught on fire. Fuck. Yeah. Get out. Get out. Get out. Get out. Get out. I thought it was one guy running around telling people that it happened. Now, maybe it is conspiracy, but, you know. It could have been a tumble dryer. Those things could catch on fire a lot.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy or a cover-up, but there could be a reason that they're not telling people. But I'm still unconvinced that that fire... And, I'm not saying that the rich are trying to kill the poor or anything like that, but there's still something to me that's very...
When you say rich, so you're talking about Glastonbury rich.
No, we're talking Chelsea.
But what is Chelsea rich? Chelsea rich is Glastonbury rich.
No, I think they're a little bit richer. That's more middle class. Those Chelsea rich is like rich.
But who goes out there and slums it in the field with glitter?
Well,
and
they're in
paint?
The back part. Yeah. The Chelsea rich are in the back part where the private bar is and all the other VIP and the Winnebagoes.
It's the funny thing about
because I'm poorer than the Chelsea rich and I'm poorer than the Glastonbury rich, but I don't hate the rich.
No,
I don't have an instinctual hatred of the rich. I don't think the rich are out to eat our children and set buildings ablaze. I don't believe that at all. And if I did, maybe I'd have more gigs. I don't know. Maybe it's possible. Who knows?
Well, let's get in back some more of the American stuff then. Because the travel ban, we're just going to talk about that. The travel ban, or the American travel ban. Mm-hmm. So it's been reinstated. Yep. Supreme Court, in certain cases, said, hey, maybe you didn't go far enough on this.
Wow.
Trump is obviously very excited about this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's been going on for so long that you've got all these people. Do you think if you were Somalian or Sudanese or Iranian, you'd be wanting to go to America? I mean, America's watching their tourism plummet anyway. Mm-hmm. The numbers are going down. So, I mean, how effective is this going to be? It's because basically it's all the same with the travel ban is, as long as if you don't have a bona fide, tenable link to anyone there. Mm-hmm. So if you're a student, you're in fine. It's fine, no problem. You got a job, you're fine.
Yeah.
But if you don't know anyone... We're not letting you in. Mm-hmm. Is that unreasonable?
Yeah, but see, America's always been really difficult to get into. I don't understand. I could see how Americans wouldn't know that because you wouldn't ever have to go jump through the
hoops. Well, I hear from people all the time
that
it's very difficult for Brits to go over. I agree, yeah.
Well, it's never been an easy place to get into. So, this whole travel ban, I mean, if you really... I mean, I remember... There was I used to work in a warehouse, and there was this guy named Saul. He was from Nicaragua, and he told me his whole life story. Once we were just unloading a truck, and it was the best movie I've ever seen in my life. He said he was in a death camp in Nicaragua because he was a communist, or he was the wrong side, or whatever. And he goes, but Glenn, I escape and I run, and he went through all the countries that he ran through, and he goes, I got to America. It's not far enough, Glenn. It's not far enough. I run to Canada, and I look, and I say, it's far enough. But you know, Glenn, this job sucks. Guy's pining for the death camps.
Ran all the way. Yeah, fuck, what am I doing? Because I know when I've gone with British people to America, and obviously as a Canadian, I remember being in line, and I was talking to some British people, and the woman just came up to me, and she's like, sir, what are you doing with these people? I was like, what? She's like, no, you go to that line. You're Canadian. You're special. And I was like, oh. And by the time they got out, I was earning my second margarita.
I was in some airport in America the day of the Boston Marathon bombing, and I was standing in line to clear customs, and I could have shifted to another line, but there was only a couple people in front of me, so I was like, I'll just do this, and a woman came up to me, and she said, go there right now and get through here. I'm like, why? And they're like, we have a Qatari Airlines flight coming through right now, and that is going to take some time.
Wow.
Well, that's good news, I guess.
So, I mean...
That is the lie of multiculturalism, is that all cultures are equal, and all cultures have an equal amount of problems with integration with Western values of freedom of speech, freedom of thought, women's rights, gay rights, whatever. That is the big lie, is that there's no difference. And he is saying that. I mean, that's one of, I'd say, five major reasons why I voted for him. But the, not even the travel ban, but for him to use the words radical Islamic terrorism at an inauguration speech was revolutionary, because I thought we were never, ever going to say that. No world leader was ever going to say that on the world stage. And he said it.
But then you're also talking about these countries. There's other countries maybe that weren't included, like Saudi Arabia, you know?
Saudi Arabia should have been included, absolutely.
And so
I
how
agree.
Do you then put your, you know, because everyone starts looking at all the bad guys.
And now do you expand to the Philippines as ISIS, because it's... You can,
but it's not, you can, it's not ISIS. That's the thing. I mean, I use ISIS just because that's the one you can even get the liberals go, I know ISIS.
Okay, no,
but it's Taliban, Hezbollah.
What
this,
I'm saying is, with that sort of thought of of get in somewhere and attack, unless you put borders on the internet, you're never going to stop it.
Sure. And you then you go further. Do you ban Russian because they hack? You know? How far do you start putting limits on things when we don't really know for sure?
But you have to start somewhere. And Obama was a perfect example of a man who I honestly to this day, people say, oh, I didn't know if he was a Muslim or it was his Muslim background or he just was an Islamophile, but he would never open his mouth. It didn't matter how many people died. Orlando, you know, this was a jihadi who hated homosexuals, and for him it was the gun. And this is a man who never would open his mouth. And had Donald Trump not come along, or people like Le Pen, who, you know, seemed like she was coming up or whatever, nobody was going to open their mouth. So you have to start somewhere. That's the important point. And just saying the words radical Islamic terrorism puts it into a context. And it proves to people who've known this for a while that they're not insane.
But it's like, it's almost in a way, it's such a redacted and watered down version. It's like trying to throw your dick on the table to impress someone, and it's flaccid and
cold.
You're
talking about the ban.
I'm just talking, it's just like, it's not that as effective. It's not the going far enough, if that's what you really want
to
do.
It's the symbolism. To me, everything is about the culture. It's political, but it's political in as much as the culture is important. And if we, you know, like the idiot up is seems disconnected, and it probably is, but you can weave everything together, a la Joyce. But the idiot up in Cambridge, the history professor who says the term genius is insulting to women, alienates women. That level of stupidity, and if you add in like a jihadi element, and you convert Islam to a race and not a religion, that kind of stupidity meets in the middle and prevents anything, any Western culture from surviving after a long time. And so basically all you need in the beginning is you need people just to open their mouths. And that's why we have an alternative media, or whatever they call this now, the YouTubes and the people.
Social-driven media.
Yeah. But we need a collapse of these monoliths, because they've been writing a script for nearly decades, and it's cuckoo. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've been having troubles with it. I've been opening for Reg Hunter. Okay. On this last tour, and Reg's a fantastic comic, but he doesn't do the kind of stand-up live as he does. Like, he's on the one show every once in a while. Yeah. And, I mean, he brought me in to do my thing, and I was worried because we were flat-out getting walkouts during my set, which you'd think, like, the opening act, if you'd come to see this.
But, yeah, stay for the show.
Yeah, like...
Why were they walking out?
Oh, just content and... yeah, I mean, we've got some of the letters that they've that they sent, and it's just.
But
to me, it's insane. Like, if you don't like something, that's fine. But and I mean, I'll give it to you. This is much more the territory of the left, where they want to get you fired.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They flat out like they don't. They don't want you to say it. Like, they don't want to take control of where their head went.
Mm-hmm.
And Reg in the poster, he's if you don't know him, he's a big black guy from Georgia. Yeah. He's wearing one glove, and the show is called Some People versus Reginald D. Hunter. So that is obviously a take on the O.J. Simpson trial, which at the heart of it is a double murder. So if you're all right with that imagery, but like, I mean, I've got a joke about swans. I say, they say swans mate for life. It's not true. They fly away as soon as you let them go.
Yeah.
And people, bestiality is the problem in our society. Come on, you know, you make it hard to be left. And I am a left wing leaning person, but I find the ship is listing.
So that's an interesting thing to get into, because we're talking about sort of how, and there's a lot of these people that are sort of keyboard warriors or people that just decide that they're going to get offended for people. Do you find this happening more and more? What's the solution to this when we have all these people that are just saying ridiculous things, standing up for these beliefs, and not really thinking things through? People just sort of react.
If I could just put in another quick performance story. They had a, it was a Invoke Democracy Now, and they were putting on a, I guess you'd call it a Brexit night a couple of weeks ago. And it was for comedians who, you know, who don't fall into the political spectrum that gets you on Mock the Week, for example, or Have I Got News For You. And I was in the middle of a bit, and some people shouted out, you're racist, racist, racist. And it seemed coordinated, because I was actually at the time impersonating a BBC reporter who was trying to coax a homeless man with a case of cider to say the word immigrants. That was the whole bit. It was like, say the word immigrants, get on a loop. And they were shouting racist. And The Guardian covered the show, and they said, a group of people shouted racist, and Franken spat four-letter words back at them. And all of a sudden, I thought, okay, now every comedian wants to be Lenny Bruce nowadays, but I thought, this is what happened to Lenny Bruce. Your Honor, can I know it's wrong to say cocksucker, but can I do the bit for you to give it context? No, Brian Logan from The Guardian basically said, a group of people shouted racist, and Franken spat four-letter words back at them. Didn't quote the bit. And this is where we are now. So Logan and The Guardian, basically, all you have to do is say people called him a racist, therefore we'll leave it to you to put it together in your head that he therefore is a racist. We don't have to give the other side of the story. And so when that sort of thing happens, we need to call them to task. We need to say, by the way, what was the other side of the story? What was the bit that prompted them to say, maybe those idiots were wrong? It could be a possibility.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that.
There's too much of that.
Well, interrupting in the middle of things. Like, you can't not let somebody finish what they're saying, and then, you know, because you have no idea, unless you know what a bit is, the whole thing at the end, the whole twist at the end might be, and I know, I was saying something racist there, but then, like, you gotta let it finish.
Do you find it's almost like a generational thing? I was talking to someone about this the other day, that there's a younger generation that we're told, you can do anything, you're great, your opinions matter. And then they get to a point and believe that that's true, so they'll be rude.
It makes me so sad.
Or they'll yell out stuff at a comedy club, and it's like, you fucking came here for comedy. You came here to be shocked a bit. There's a little sign on the door.
The youth are supposed to be, just by virtue of their age, they're supposed to be anti-authoritarian. And yet they follow along lockstep like little Maoists. And they go to these universities, and they talk about safe zones and hate speech and all this nonsense. And they are supposed to lead the way. And so the adults need to come in and give them a cultural spanking and just persist.
Yeah, I had a thought about this, too. Rebellion has really suffered right now, because the ultimate form of rebellion would be radical Islam. Like, you just hate society so much that you go into a crowd and you blow up.
Sure.
It makes it really hard for somebody who kind of wants to rebel, you know? Like, the big problem I found is when mainstream co-opted punk music. It was a perfect place for a little rebel to go, and it was great. There was just slam dancing, jumping around, and they could make their own music. But now you get Blink 180. I've got a neck tattoo. It's I'm pretty counterculture, aren't I? Yeah. And that's the problem. They take it.
But it's a two-way street as well. We don't. The other side doesn't fight back. The other side, they start to fight back, and because they've conflated the word, like, I'm a nationalist. I'm in Great Britain because I love Great Britain. I didn't choose this. To me, this country is not the same as any other country in the world. I love Great Britain. I love Great Britain's history, culture, art, and especially its comedy, or what used to be its comedy. And for those of us, we open our mind, we start to speak nationalism. By this time, they have conflated the word nationalist with Nazi. There is no nuance. It is just, whoosh, you're a Nazi.
Yeah. And so we
need to persist and keep persisting and don't apologize. We're like, the apologies are done. That's it.
Is it part of this sort of clickbait journalism that we're also getting into, where, you know, traditional journalists, and we'll get into this Donald Trump and the fake news, but where people are basically just clicking on, so what they do is put out something bombastic, so you click onto it when it's actually not even the real story. They're doing it basically fighting for your social media headlines. So a lot of times the news are just so hyperbolic that there's actually what they're trying to get across. It's like, oh, you weren't actually doing this. We just led with this, you know, fucking ridiculous headline.
Yeah, or that. And what they responded was incredible. Yeah. And then you
won't believe what happened next. Yeah. It's like, no, I totally will believe what happened next because I watched it. I mean, so CNN, I think we talked about this for a bit. CNN, three of their journalists had to resign because this story that they were trying to investigate, Scaramanga, I think his name was, that he was, which sounds like an evil guy.
Yeah.
But that he was.
Did they name him? Did they make him up?
And what is his name? Is
I think Scaremongerer.
Scaramouche.
Yeah, Scaramouche.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you do the Fandango, thunderbolts and lightning. But so apparently, no, so it's all fake. And so all these guys resign. There was, you know, I think you've got sort of the CNN guys going after Trump, aggressively going after him. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of being found. Now, it's just a victory for him because now he's basically saying, you know, he said the tweet today, wow, CNN had to retract the big story on Russia with three employees forced to resign. What about the other phony stories that they do? Fake news.
Yeah.
Great. So, I mean...
Yeah, I've felt that about Trump. I mean, I'm not a fan of him, but some of the things that they did, like complained before he got into office about his behavior.
Yeah.
They could have waited a week and gone, we didn't like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, okay, well, he's not even in there yet, so we don't like him. He's not done a good job. And then the LGBT did a big rally against him, and he'd not done anything.
Oh, because he didn't declare June gay month.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but you have 12 months of the year, so there's only 12 minorities before we create the zodiac of minorities in the sky. That does not mean, if you don't do cartwheels every time somebody says the word gay marriage, and this I lived as a woman for 7 months, okay, so, like, I'm not, like... If you're not applauding, it doesn't mean you don't like gay people. It just means we're tired of the celebration and the sparklers, and Stonewall was, what was that, 69?
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on. And by the way, if you're concerned about gay rights, there might be who out there that you... It all goes back to their own childhoods. They're afraid of some Baptist preacher they probably met when they were seven. But this all gets magnified to the political level. It's like, you must name June gay month. Or you hate gay rights. I know a lot of gays who voted for Trump because they are tired of having their narrative told for them constantly. They're just like, look, I like to have sex with men. Can we move on and be done with this?
Yeah, I've always found my gay friends to be quite Republican.
Yeah. Cabin, they call them in the state. Cabin Republicans.
Yeah. Scott Capurro was mentioning that in the previous episode about that as well. But he's not a log cabin Republican.
Oh, no.
No.
That could mean many things. I thought that was a maneuver.
He's got him in the log cabin.
Uh-oh. It always ends. The fight ends.
Russia was a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
And you know, when this was this happened in October, from my memory, because I followed Trump like Beatles fans would follow, you know, where's he playing tonight? I mean, I was watching, like, every rally I could on live stream. Just as a performer. I was fascinated by him as a performer. Because he'd do the same material. He would just riff. He was a riffer. And the Russia thing, I remember, got invented in October. It got absolutely out of thin air, and it got invented when she was losing. And he said some comment, I remember, like, I wish they could find out what was in her emails. You know, obviously a joke, and, like, reminding everybody, like, this woman is a crook. And, of course, he's advocating for an espionage. I mean, the whole thing got invented in October.
Well, there's also a lot of things. I mean, there was that Democratic. There was a lot of that huge pedophile ring that was going on as well. That there was a huge
Pizzagate.
What's that? Pedigate?
I didn't follow that.
A lot of people that got arrested in the Democratic Party. People that got arrested for that.
But the dude who showed up with a fucking assault rifle at Comet Pizza.
What happened?
He discharged his rifle because there was this big internet thing, and just at the end he was like, yeah, the intel on that wasn't 100% after fucking waving a gun around a pizza parlor.
Well, because, I mean, one of the big news organizations, New York Times, subscription only, by the way, they printed all these Trump lies. I don't know if you've seen them.
I don't read New York
Times. Five pages. Then basically they went through and basically wrote down everything he said and found a way he didn't say that.
By the way, real quickly. When I lived in New York, I never read the New York Times because it was the only New York paper that never had anything about New York on the front page.
I just couldn't afford it.
You see Palestine.
I'm a crossworder.
Yeah.
I need it. I need the New Yorker
just so I can read a cartoon I don't understand.
Yeah.
And he's sort of had a tat back and forth with them. And, I mean, obviously we know that news companies are owned by the people. They're not owned by one or two owners. They're owned by everyone. So they don't have a personal agenda. And I don't know how many Republicans own a lot of newspapers. So is this Is this a fair that a publication basically just grassed out so much and they just really want to get them? Is it show that they're not doing anything on unbiased news?
All right, so people, it's funny, I don't know if you know Spiked magazine. I got a lot of mates with Spiked, and their platform is largely, you know, free speech, free thought. And they were surprised. I've been hanging out with these guys a lot, and we battle of ideas. I've met a few of those guys, and they were surprised that I was voting for Trump. And I said, well, I thought it made perfect sense because, you know, you for free speech. And they would bring up free press. And I would say, I believe in free press, but the press doesn't believe in free press. That's where we are now. The press no longer believes in free press. So for all their talk about, you know, getting the truth out there, it's not. I mean, it's 24-hour news, which I don't think we ever needed to begin with. I'm a bit old-fashioned. Well, back in the day, you turn on the news, and at the end of the day, there was the national anthem, and then the TV set shut off. But now it's 24/7, which means you have to fill it up with opinion half the time. And they're mostly opinion rags.
I find you have to speedball it. And I do this because I am a news junkie. Mm. I put on the left-wing news for an hour, flip over to Fox, just because it goes high and it low. And, you know, and you do find... At the end of doing that, you've got more of a balanced idea.
I agree, but I also agree with you in the regard that we've lost real news. Like, I'll go to BBC website. I'm like, just give me some news. I don't care about the fucking Bake Off. I don't care about someone on doing some crappy thing.
Sports. What the fuck are they doing on the news anymore? There's channels dedicated to sports. Surely they could talk about themselves there.
And we could find out about the fucking weather just by going outside. That's the way I see it. But last night, real quick, there was a story last night in the Evening Standard, and I try not to read the news anymore. I just because you get it by accident. That's the thing nowadays with social media. You just accidentally get the news, but it does my head in. And there was a copy on the train, and there was a story about a hate crime against a Muslim woman, and they said it was a hate crime because she was the only Muslim on the street. And I thought, well, I'm the only American on my street, so if anything happened to me, can I claim that as a hate crime? But I thought the real story was the fact that the Essex Police and Fire Department has a Islamic advisor. And that was like paragraph 7. And I thought, the Islamic advisor for the Essex Police... Why does a fire brigade need an Islamic advisor?
Probably so they don't get sued. So they can work with the community.
But shouldn't that be the real story? Like, why the hell does Essex have an Islamic advisor in the fire... It's insane!
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I can't imagine what they'd need that for.
But the story is the hate crime, though. The story is the hate crime. And it took me back to, you know, the fake news, right? San Francisco Chronicle. A woman... This was about 2009. A woman's face was shot. You know, she was entering her house. Right. A woman's face was shot. They just ran with it, front page, a hate crime in Fremont, California. Hate crime. It was a largely Muslim neighborhood. Must have been a hate crime. Interviews with local imams saying, unfortunately, after 9/11, we do experience a lot of hate and we worry about the backlash. But it's fucking 2-3 pages. And I remember thinking, it could have been an honor killing. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, you know, page 10, 11, you know, down at the bottom, turned out it was her brother because she wouldn't wear the veil. Now, that was the story. But no, we had to... That's San Francisco. You had to watch these headlines day in and day out. Hate crime is everywhere, and you start to believe this bullshit narrative.
I've always been bothered by the term hate crime, just in that, like, why is it worse? Like, crime is...
That's a first-degree crime, usually, if you have intent to do it.
Can you imagine if you just had a crime committed against you? You'd feel guilty reporting it.
I've been a victim of love crime.
We need more love crimes.
Yeah.
We need more love
crimes. No, not the way I do it.
Is this the log cabin maneuver again? Let me show you the log cabin on you. So, I mean, a lot of these fake news, and there was obviously Google being taken down today by the European Commission for basically their fake, basically the way that all of their links lead you. So I think the European Commission fined them something like $2.3 billion today.
Yeah.
Basically saying that if you click on a story and it leads you to shopping, that they're basically running things to their own thing. Are we in a point, though, too, where the news is just doesn't... People have shut off from the news because it is only a couple of stories and we're not actually getting the truth?
Yeah. See, I think with the Google thing, and it's the same thing with flying, when people get concerned about their rights being like, I was searched and I... You don't have a right to fly. That's not a human right you're born with. And the same with Google. Like, you can't... good. Like, they've given us quite a machine for free. So if they want to make a bit of scratch, you can't go, oh, how dare you? Well, then make some, make like a government Google that, you know, that anybody else can use if they want to choose. But,
well, it's, I guess it's hard when you look at, say, a company like Apple, which was, you know, formed in the late 60s, 70s, and now is worth more than the UK economy.
Yeah.
So two guys started something in their garage, and they made it bigger than this whole fucking country in terms of the economy. You sort of go, at one point, do we have to go, hey, you're bigger than us, you know? And when do we sort of, you know, you want to let free market go, but not if it tramples all over the competition of everyone else and stagnates your economy. That's just not going to benefit.
Well, there's no trust. There's no trust busters. There's no monopoly busters.
And even if they do, what do you,
yeah, but that's that started years ago, man. They never wanted to catch people.
AT&T in America, they busted that up. That was becoming a monopoly, and they busted it up. I don't know what it splintered into.
Well, there was also a lot of stupidity when you've got, like, AOL. It's like deciding to do... And that's, to me, those are the hilarious moments of any sort of corporate malfeasance when you just make it really, we're going to go America Online. I mean, I think I probably still have one of the CDs somewhere with cocaine remnants on it in my house.
What part?
Whereabouts? You remember, buddy. You remember when we built the mini cabin.
yeah, that's right. Doesn't count.
But, you know, I think it's just... And it's... You almost find it too is it's people are, you know, when we're looking for leadership here, and America had a guy that reality TV show stood up, is the Democrats. What are they doing leadership wise? Are they, do you think they're afraid? Because now Trump is attacking Obama, which well, you don't go after a sitting, you don't go after a sitting, like a president who's gone usually. No. But Trump is really going after
him. But he should, because there was a religious ethos around Obama that needs to be punctured.
Well, the Democrats should have
Iranian deal alone. You don't sit down with people who hang homosexuals in the town square and talk to them. And I feel the same way about Saudi Arabia. When he met with Saudi Arabia, I was like, don't, stop, nobody. Like, leave them alone. Fuck. It's not, I'm pro-oil all the way, because how did we get to this gig here today? We need oil. I get that. But, you know, let's, well, first off, Trump's going to start digging again. He's going to start allowing the Americans to dig again for their own oil, because they're not going to be hamstrung by this global warming bullshit. But stuff like that. Like, we don't sit down and talk to Iranian theocratic thugs. But he did. He said Obama had this utopian vision, and we're in Syria right now because of his Arab Spring social experiment. He was a social justice warrior. I tell you what, let's get rid of all of these, you know, moderate dictators and let the people rule themselves. And it's been absolute fucking chaos, and there's bodies in Tunisia, and it's, yeah. And but I think Trump should, don't attack Syria, get the fuck out of there. And don't meet with Saudi. That's my idea. We get away from Iran and Saudi Arabia, that whole fucking nightmare.
I think the Democrats are suffering from just not letting not letting it go the way America wanted to. They should have let Sanders win, and they actively didn't.
No, he's a communist.
Doesn't matter.
He's
doesn't
under
matter.
FBI
it's what
investigation
people wanted.
As well.
His
now,
wife,
so his wife is under an FBI.
Yeah.
It's what people wanted. It's the reason Trump got in. They wanted
You know why Sanders lost? Because he stood up there on the primary debates with Hillary Clinton. I don't care about those silly old emails. That's when he gave it to her. So it's his own damn fault. I don't care about those emails.
But is it?
And he handed it to her.
Is it the same way though? Democrats screwed him down, and the Democrats threw him under the bus, just like McCain was thrown under the bus when George W. Bush ran. The party turned around and basically go, "No, she's too powerful. You don't have it. You."
Yeah, but he also slit his own wrist.
Well, he was also Seinfeld too. I think he was.
If he had been
Curb
up
enthusiasm.
There,
enthusiasm. Oh, one of those.
If he had gone up there and said, "You know what? I do want to know about your emails. I think you're crooked. I think you're corrupt. I think you're ashamed to the Democratic Party. You're definitely not a Kennedy or a Roosevelt or whatever." And he didn't. I don't care. And then they had the cute little handshake, and that fucking bitch won the nomination.
Let me get to another point.
I think it was slightly slanted though, and that was the DNC. That was their behavior, and they're suffering for it now because there was people who really saw a chance at real change with the Bernie Sanders, and they're disenfranchised now.
Is it though? And we talked about this last week though, that this whole Russia thing, the email thing, it's just all the fucking shell game to distract us from what's really going on.
It's a sci-fi story.
Does it really care that much?
No.
Why are we focusing on this so much
when
there's still poverty?
Saying Russia,
there's still guns.
Well. Yeah, what they're saying Russia did isn't really. I don't even think it could be termed illegal. It's just it's just advertising, really.
But I'm sure if Russia was going to go, hey, look at what they've done to us, I'm sure America's doing the same
thing. Well, that's the thing. There's like the amount that America's
been involved
with.
A nuclear power plant in Iran that shuts down and can't work? You think the Israelis and the Americans aren't plugging into something in there?
Well, look at South and Central America. How many people are in power there because it was America's wish? You can't turn around and say, Russia meddled in our elections.
I mean, Obama meddled in how many elections when he was...
America's
He used drones to meddle in the elections, so his were different. He just get you from afar.
Or killer robots. We don't know who controls them.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he was the king of the drones, man. If people really wanted to hit it, I mean, that's...
But nobody cared about Russia. I mean, my theory was that he was the last politically correct enemy that the Democrats could have on the world stage.
Do you think that they wanted to create this 1985 Soviet versus America kind of thing and point it against it?
It wasn't that. I mean, it just shows us how warped they are because, you know, the party that would have been pro-Trotsky has now flipped to this. And they're actually sounding more like the Republicans of the 80s as a result. But I think it's more because Putin is a nationalist who, you know, and not a good man. I mean, his track record as he ascended to power is not pretty. There's a lot of questionable stuff in there. But he is a big man on the world stage swinging his dick around. But a nationalist, too. And that's really what they hate about him. They hate nationalists.
Well, Russia, they just did a poll, I think it was yesterday, they voted who was the best Russian
Stalin.
Of all time was Stalin.
Yeah.
And I mean, he didn't kill anybody.
Within my family, that's not who would have won. The Estonian side of my family.
I think anyone who goes near the Kachin Forest, go in there, you'll find that he wasn't the best man.
But that's what I said.
No, he really wasn't.
That's what I said about Trump.
Members of my family.
Millions.
Trump the other day, and I speak very bluntly, and to me that's politeness, because I'm from Missouri, and I think it's impolite to, you know, hem and haw.
Sure.
And I was doing an interview with another comedian at the South Bank Center, and these two girls came up, little uni girls, and they left a note. Like, they couldn't help overhearing. And it was this note about, you know, your comments on Trump and feminism, and it was really, whoa, you talk about paranoia.
Passive a cuntus.
And she had to come back to get her charger, which was hysterical. And I go, oh, now that you're here, can I ask you what my comments about Trump were? And she'd overheard me say, and this is what I said, I said, can you imagine living in a world right now where it was Sturgeon, May, Merkel, you know, not slagging off women, but I said, I kind of like the fact that we have a big man on the world stage swinging his dick around.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, don't fuck with us. This is America, and Putin is like, this is Russia. I like people asserting their...
A definitive leader.
Mm-hmm. And when it was coming out of her mouth, I found it... he said this about swinging a big dick on the stage, and I started to laugh.
Yeah.
And I said, I've never heard it come out of a girl's mouth, but this stuff that I say coming out of a woman's mouth before. But the thing is, I cannot take you seriously. Somebody would eavesdrop and leave a note.
A passive aggressive
note. And this is what the youth of today have degenerated into, like little Gestapos.
Because they think that their opinion matters so much that they are going to tell you.
Yeah.
And I guess the ultimate thing would be you to go, you know what? I am so wrong.
Yeah.
I'm changing my life.
But they're religious. This is religious behavior. And so for a long time, like I always go into the jihad thing because I was like, If you want something that's, you know, women's, you know, you care about women's rights and gay rights, why the fuck aren't you tackling this? And for a long time, I saw it. One side says we're in a holy war. The other side has their head in the sand. I actually believe both sides are engaged in a holy war. So you have, you know, this jihadi element here that is overtly religious. And then on the other side, you have Christians who don't want to call themselves Christians. So they want to go to the Wailing Wall with the teddy bears and cry and weep and Ariana Grande. But it's the same kind of Christian bullshit. The world needs more love. This is the shit they're spewing right now. So that little girl coming up to me is the equivalent of the Southern Baptist I grew up with in Missouri.
Buying you a Coke.
Buying me a Coke and talking about God, and that's the same shit she's doing.
Oh, God.
Sick me.
You'd prefer to, like, because I do merch in the break when it opened for Reg.
Is that the drug?
But every once in a while, somebody's come up and just flat out unloaded on me.
Yeah.
And quite often had to have stood in a line for 10 minutes of people getting selfies with me buying a DVD.
Yeah.
And then dug right to the end. You wouldn't have said that if you knew what happened to me in 1978.
You should have said, I do know what happened in 1978. That's exactly why I told it.
That's why I told the story.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I've... pulled away from doing as much stand-up, but that was one of the things that I was getting a problem with, because I like to talk controversially, and you just have people, I'm offended. I'm like, fuck you, I don't care.
What are you, five?
My set was not here to, I don't care if you're offended. I really, in fact, I'm not going to care on the way home. I'm just going to, you're not even a bother. I'm not even going to think about you.
Exactly.
And there's this entitlement, I guess, that comes in with all of these people, and it's...
But it's because, and it's quite right, what you see, a fear for the younger generation, because with their generation, with offense comes a risk of losing your job. You know, like it really is. It is a big thing. Like, I'm offended. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to report you to that higher up person right there, and we're all going to act like we've never read 1984.
You're reporting someone who's in their 40s to someone who's in their 50s when you're 20. Good luck with that.
It's going to. It's changing, and I do believe we do have to stand up from the right and from the left. Call bullshit on it. You know, everybody's got to be allowed to say what they're going to say, because, and that's the one funny thing where they talk about religions, and you can't say anything against religion. All of the major religions have hamstrung themselves, because if you did pass that. It's their views of gay people, because there are ancient religions that have gay gods.
Yeah.
So if you say you have to kill gay people, they're actually saying you have to kill God, which makes all of their religions illegal too.
You have to, like, I come from a fundamentalist Christian milieu from my youth. The worst you would get from a fundamentalist Christian is, hate the sin, love the sinner. That's not hanging somebody from a crane.
No,
it is not. And that when people talk about gay rights and they bring up and Christianity falls out of their mouth, I'm like, you have no understanding of Christian history, Christian Reformation, Christian Enlightenment. Christians freed the slaves. I always put that. Christian freed the slaves in the American Civil War. Without Christianity, atheists would not have lifted a finger. I'm convinced, because atheism today. And I'm not a Christian. I believe in Christendom, Christian history, Western history. But the atheist of today, your average atheist of today, goes off to Westfields and buys a bunch of shit they don't need, and doesn't go. That's it. It's nothing.
Our religion has changed from a deity to a corporation, pretty much.
A corporation.
Well, Christ
exactly.
is also on record in the Bible he never talks about homosexuality, but he does. At one point, they asked him why him and his disciples didn't follow the dietary requirements of the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's because it's not what enters into my mouth that makes me a sinner. It's what exits it, which is him basically saying you don't have to follow Leviticus.
Yeah,
because that's where the food, don't be gay, and the food laws are in Leviticus.
So dick is part of the...
Yeah, it might have been a blowjob, though.
But it's freedom from Pharisaic law. Like, I'm doing this documentary on William Blake, and my whole point, I don't know, my whole point from the beginning was, it's called Red, White, and Blake.
Yeah.
So you say, because this is an author who's been co-opted by modern academia to be a radical feminist and a radical, and he wasn't any of those. He was a radical Christian patriot. He just happened to believe in his own version of Christianity, which was quite psychedelic, and his own version of England, which was also quite psychedelic. And that's what made him a radical, but everything gets conflated. And now if you're radical, you have to be a feminist, whereas to be a feminist is the least radical thing you could possibly be.
So then if we have someone like Trump, who, as we agree, is standing up for his beliefs, and he's using a platform to announce, his, just like FDR's fireside chats, he's actually getting right to the people. Are we facing this sort of ideological sort of battle in a way that it's like you've got people that are for speaking their mind and people that are just for attacking other people's thoughts?
Yeah.
Is this sort of the sort of battle that we're in right now? The people who are just attacking speech, the people tell you All in the Family, which is one of my favorite TV shows, we can't watch that anymore because it's too edgy.
Well, this is the thing about, when everybody attacked Milo and no platformed him, what nobody brought up in the end is it wasn't him not being allowed to speak that made him lose his platform to speak. It was what he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was when he got a chance to really go, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, fucking sometimes a kid wants it." You made a mistake there, Milo. But I didn't mean it. In the end,
yeah. But how many of those stories you hear where they're just not allowed to? I remember Christopher Hitchens in Berkeley. They protested, and he wasn't allowed to speak. Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
One of the greatest minds of,
Well, I mean, Bill Cosby's going on a speaking tour. So, I mean, he's got... He'll have a lot of drinks.
Yeah. Hey, wonder what he's going to do at the merch table.
I was talking about him the other day because somebody said, you think he did it? And I said, you know what? I don't know. But here's the thing. Bill Cosby, I have always admired him, comedically, not the rape stuff notwithstanding. He and Dick Gregory, you know Dick Gregory, right?
Yeah.
They came out at the same time, and it was a trajectory. And to me, it's like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King had it right. Integrate within a society, black children, white children join in. Malcolm X is one of the worst people in history because it's all segregation. He was an anti-Semite, prison educated. I mean, but that is the trajectory that Black Lives Matter, Black Panthers, all that stuff followed. Bill Cosby, very early on in interviews, would just say, like, I'm not interested in my race. And I love them. I love the man for it because he put out albums that were very surreal. The Chicken Story, the all of that.
He's an amazing, amazing performer. I mean, as a comedian,
he's done so much.
And
but Dick Gregory, it was all this, you know, militant, you know, black, you know, for the black issues. And Cosby said, no, I was always going to be, I was not going to dwell on it. Because I had no choice about my race. So why would I focus on the least interesting thing about me? Brilliant, man.
I read... James Weldon Johnson's book, The Diary of an Ex-Black Man, and he basically said the same thing. He said he just didn't want to be defined by it, and he ended up...
Good for him.
Yeah, he was... I think he was the first ambassador to Cuba or something. But late... I can't remember when he was... But olden times...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up as a little white boy growing up on a farm in Canada.
Yeah.
When I saw Fat Albert... I thought it was the most awesome thing. Do you remember? I didn't know there was all these characters and personalities I didn't know and lives I didn't know, but I was just like, it was funny.
Yeah.
I love Mushmouth. He was funny.
I was in the hat with that.
Yeah, I couldn't get past that when I was a kid.
Cool stuff, but
I was living in the Yukon at the time, and I was just like, there's no way
you
could wear a hat like that.
You're breaking down the reality of Fat Albert. Mushmouth, isn't that? You wouldn't talk.
Yeah. But my parents actually, that's one of the reasons I've become a comedian when I was 12. Bill Cosby, for whatever reason, used to come to Saskatoon a lot. He really liked it. And he said it was because in the 70s and 60s, he used to come up to Canada, and he really liked it because it didn't matter if you were black. Like, and especially Saskatchewan.
There's a lot of black performers that would come up and perform in Canada for that reason.
So and he came, and this was right at the start of the Cosby Show, right before it. But I remember just being in there, just watching a dude go and going, that's what I'm going to
do. Do you remember, too, when Lisa Bonet was on the Cosby Show, and she was going to do some naked stuff? I mean, he was always the very pious. You know, he was, you know, whatever personality he came across as a very, you know, family man, good values. Yeah. And, you know, whether, you know, we don't know. It's all hearsay.
Yeah.
People say it, but a lot of people have been saying it. Hannibal Buress, obviously.
Do you know Hannibal Buress, on my first album, he was opening for me in Chicago, and he introduces me on my, like, it's, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the... I was able to say to my parents, it was like one of the, because they never know who the comics are. Yeah. I was like, that's the Bill Cosby guy. And my mom was still, well, I don't know if that was appropriate what he did. But mom, it's on there.
You know, I was the other day, I was thinking about the first people I got high with and dropped acid with in small town Missouri. And, you know, one of the first people was a guy named Terry. And he was black and he was gay. And he hated hip hop. And we listened to Jimi Hendrix, and these were my friends. And I just the older I get, the more I'm like, you know what? You multiculturalists have ascribed racism to it. We got beyond all of this shit from simply being young, rebellious youths in small town Missouri, and we didn't need your fucking help. And you have done everything you could to split the races up and split the genders up and put us all in little boxes now. And enough is enough.
So you
know what? Free up the economy. Fire all of you guys and get, you know, disperse your, like the woman at Cambridge, the term genius alienates women. Fire her ass. Why are you teaching history at Cambridge? Fire your ass, because you are reducing women to idiots.
Well, it's also, I think it's what you said was a good point. Everyone should just relax and smoke a joint together. Maybe that's sort of the point we're getting at.
That's because I think a lot of people are told what offends them now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you didn't know,
they're not actually offended. I agree.
Did they say the buzzwords? Because if they said the buzzwords, I'm really, really, you know,
that's
context
Maoism. They just want to rave the red book. I know,
yeah.
Well, maybe we'll shut her down there. For everyone. Please subscribe and listen. It's a very good chat. We've learned a lot of things. And hopefully, if you guys are offended by this, fuck yourselves. But subscribe and listen and like. Will and Glenn, thanks a lot for having you guys down. And we'll see you again on another recording.
Thank you, Wade. Thanks, man.